Here's our warm-up speaker. Now, when I first met him, my memory's kind of shot, eh? Not because, well, because I'm a burnout too, but I was pretty sedated, eh? I was up in Fresno and they had just taken my legs, man. And some guy comes and says, I'm supposed to take you to meetings, eh? Orale, who are you, man? Andrew. Well, how do you know? He goes, because Louie's my sponsor. And I go, oh, well, there it is there. I knew that day this guy was going to stay sober, eh? I want to introduce Andrew. He's become a dear friend, awesome dude, involved in service. And he used to pick me up. He used to drive from Kingsburg to Fresno to pick me up to take me to meetings, man. Right. He's our 10-minute for tonight. Hey. He has 4 years, 2 months, and 1 day today.
What? My name's Andrew. I am an alcoholic. I'm from Selma.
Oh.
And I want to say the first thing. First thing I want to say is thank God for my freedom, because I am a real alcoholic. You know, I've had this obsession with alcohol since I first started drinking. When I wasn't drinking, I wanted more. It was something that I tried to control on my own willpower throughout my life, and so. I didn't have the power to do that. So that's why I say thank God for my freedom. And when I say thank God for my freedom, I mean thank God that I don't have the obsession today to drink or the compulsion to drink and use. Not only am I clean and sober today, but I'm not depressed, and I'm not taking any kind of meds from the doctor, which reminds me, I thought that that was going to be the answer when I stopped drinking. I thought that I was going to need to something, because I'm the type of alcoholic that when I stopped drinking, something inside of me was telling me that that I was going to die if I didn't put alcohol in my body. There was something in me like that. Like I didn't think that my heart would function properly or my brain. You know, I knew that as a kid, obviously, I lived without alcohol, but it, throughout my drinking, it got to such a level that I felt that I needed to have alcohol inside of my body for it to be able to flow properly. So I was always looking for something physical to deal with or material to deal with a spiritual problem. I was thinking that I just needed to find the right combination of this or that or something from the doctor. I thought maybe I had, you know, some kind of chemical imbalance in my brain. And it's probably true that after all that drinking and other things that, you know, that did become the case at some point. But when I went to the doctors, and I asked them, you know, I have a chemical imbalance in my brain. You know, my mother's diabetic. So when my mom she's not feeling so good, she can take some blood and she knows how much is what's going on and how much to replace it. So I asked the doctor like that, you know, shouldn't you be able to take some blood and, you know, find out exactly what the imbalance is and fix it? And, you know, give me the right amount. And the doctor's like, well, no, it doesn't work like that. You know, and the side effects, you know, of that kind of stuff, you know, so I'm just so grateful. That's for me. You know, I'm not a doctor. I can't say for anybody else. But for me, I haven't taken that stuff in over 4 years. I haven't taken anything like that, you know, since I've been sober. My sobriety date is September 17, 2013. And so thank God for my freedom. You know, and this, back to this real problem, you know, that I was talking about that was spiritual. You know, it was all about me, you know, this, this alcohol and drugs were just but a symptom of my problem. The real problem is my selfish self-centeredness. And I had to relate myself right with God because, well, when I got this gift of desperation, and I didn't think it was such a great gift when I got it. It came with a willingness to do anything, you know, because I had had, you know, this gift. Like I had been desperate in a way, but not like I was this time. And I had come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and well, actually, first I came into like a cousin program, I guess, if you will, because I thought I was an addict. And I thought if I could just stop doing other stuff, and I did for many years. All I did, when my son was born, I knew I needed to do something where I wouldn't get a dirty test, so I became a truck driver. And so what I did, because I needed to pay for him, you know, to take care of him, but I had to stop everything else, and that's when I just went straight to drinking, you know. And so I kind of lost my train of thought there for a second. But, I thought that I was an addict too, you know, and that I just needed to stop doing all these other things and then everything would be okay. And, you know, I have the disease of alcoholism. I stopped doing that other stuff, but that alcohol was always in my mind. I think we all know how to get drunk here pretty much. I mean, I guess there's a few people who don't, so I'm not going to get into that. But when I did come in, you know, I was kind of looking around and I had a couple sponsors, one here, one there, and, you know, I would hear people say, like, sometimes I would hear people say, just give it a year. Just give it a year here, and if after a year you don't like it, you can get your misery refunded to you. And then they would say, take the steps, you know. But I didn't hear that part. I didn't hear that part about taking the steps. I just heard, stay here for a year, and I thought, after I get a year, then they're going to throw a parade for me down the street and they're going to give me my diploma because, you know, it's still all about me. You know, I'm going to be cured. If I can just get that 1 year, something magical, that's when the miracle is going to happen. Well, that's not. I did that one day at a time. I white knuckled it. I had not taken the steps and I had these little tornadoes in my brain. They were going around and they were attacking me, like, you know, like my head literally felt like it was going to explode. And so I thought that I needed those to go to the doctor again. And I did, and I got those, and I relapsed after a year, a month, a week, and a day. I figured this is good enough. I've been wanting that drink for a long time, and this is the only thing that's going to slow this mind down and let me have some peace. And I relapsed after that amount of time, and within 4 months I was almost dead. I had celebrated a year, and you know, with all my friends, you know, where I got sober is in Kingsburg. There's a fellowship there, but we also have a really good meeting on Friday nights in Selma, and we also just started another meeting recently in Selma on Sunday nights. And but I go to these groups. I go to Fowler. I go to a lot of meetings. I got in service. I've been in service. These are things that are important. I had to get a sponsor, you know, and my sponsor asked me to speak here. And I'm really excited to hear my sponsor's sponsor, which is Tomas, speak tonight. You know, I'm grateful for the people that have come before me and that have helped me so much, you know, because God has done for me what I could not do for myself. There's no way I could have designed these steps. You know, I'm not the first one. I believe that God helped somebody else. But these things I could not have done on my own, you know, and these things have been passed on to me. I couldn't save my ass and my face at the same time. I had to come back to my fellowship, and I was almost dead. Physically, I was really, really bad. When I started taking the steps, that's when I started having these little spiritual experiences, and some of them were very powerful and very profound. I remember reading the big book myself, and it is possible to read through that big book and not take the steps that are contained in those first 164 pages. You know, it's good to have somebody who's done that, you know, to take you through there. You know, that's what had to happen for me. And so I'm really grateful for that. But this is a very personal thing. You know, this is between me and my higher power. You know, that's the spiritual part of this whole thing, because, you know, even as a kid, usually when I would pray to God, it was that I was crying and I was mad and I wasn't getting my way, you know. And if only God would change the world and make it the way I think it should be, then I would be happy, everybody else would be happy, everything would be good. You know, I thought my prayers were as if God had created me so that way he could serve me. And today that's not the case. You know, today the case is that my real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to my fellows. And I don't do anything perfectly, but I've had a lot of progress in this program. You know, when I took the third step and I offered myself to God to build with me and to do with me as he will, that was kind of scary, not knowing what he was going to do. You know, I don't know how other 12-step programs work, but I know how the third step is in this program. And for me, it was absolutely necessary. And to continue on, because without taking an inventory, that really didn't mean much. You know, I needed to move forward. There were causes and conditions why I would keep going back. So this program is something that I had to have faith in. I had to trust in. You know, that was something that was very spiritual for me to offer myself to God and to ask him to relieve me of the bondage of self so that I can better do his will. And, I ask him to, you know, help me with my difficulties, to take away my difficulties, and that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of his power, his love, and his way of life. You know, this is important because before, when I would do something that was good for somebody else, my ego would get involved and I would say, look what I did, you know, and I would tell people, oh, I was helpful to this person or that person. But, you know, there was a point in my life that I couldn't hardly get off the ground, you know. So all the glory goes to God, you know. I think when I'm able to be helpful or do something for somebody, instead of it being about me, I thank God that I was able to do that, you know. I thank God for the simple things today. My son and I, we have a good relationship today. I'm a single parent. I'm also going to college. I was in college today. I work more than a full-time job. And, you know, my life is pretty good today as a result of this. You know, at this program, and thank God. So I kind of lost my train of thought again there, but I'm really grateful for this program. Without it, I couldn't do the things that I do. So I give all the glory to God, and it is about this, my relationship to other human beings. It's about being able to go back and tell people that I was wrong, not just that I'm sorry. Again, thank you guys, and it has been such an honor to be able to come here to speak and to listen to Tomas and hear all Albert's jokes and stuff. That's really good. You know, he's got plenty of them. He just kind of comes up with more as he goes. So thank you, and I'll turn it back to Albert.
I got to tell you, man, I've had the privilege of meeting Tomas back in 89 when I got sober, man. And, you know, not only has he been an inspiration, but he's become a dear friend. I've got to know him. He'd go visit me in Fresno, and he took me that AA Comes Alive, or AA Comes of Age, the book, you know. And I've got to go to his house and read his meditations with him. You know, and his books have a story, eh? And I tripped out on that. It gives me great pleasure to introduce. One thing I'll say, but I'll let him tell you, eh? Him and I have one thing in common. Well, we got a lot, but there's one thing that he used to be a boxer, eh? But I'll let him tell you that. Okay, Tomas from Fresno, he got sober 5-1-71. He's got 42 years, and he's got 558 months, 33,017 weeks, 17. Anyways, he's got a lot, eh? Hey, but check this one out. You know how, like, sometimes we do that one day at a time, that 1 hour at a time, that 1 minute at a time, that white-knuckle sobriety, eh? Check this out. He's got 24,485,455 white-knuckle sobriety minutes, eh? Come on up, Tomas.
My name is Tomas. I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Hey, Tomas.
I want to, first off, you know, thank Albert, you know, and Eddie, you know, for inviting me, the group for having me, you know, and I'd like to acknowledge my sponsor, Bernard, who's here, you know, and his significant other, Sylvia. You know, this isn't the first time, man, you know, that Andrew has 12-stepped me. Because you just finished 12-stepping me, man. I was coming back, you know, from New Mexico, you know, which is where I was born. You know, I have family up there. And I was on my way back, you know, and anxious to get back to Fresno, you know. And I'm at the airport, man, and I'm running, you know, to catch my flight because I didn't want to miss my flight. And all of a sudden, my cell phone rings, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not used to it ringing. I'm like, oh, no, they're calling me, man. And it was Andrew calling me from, you know, from Fresno, man. And he says, we'd like you to speak in Selma. Oh, man, it was like a breath of fresh air, man, hearing, you know, Andrew, man, calling me from home, man, and me wanting to get home, you know. And I'm grateful and thankful, man, to be, you know, a small part, you know, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous by the grace of God. And I also want to thank Ron for bringing me here, man. I wouldn't be here without you, Ron. Thank you, and God bless you, man. You know, I had occasion, you know, to 12-step, you know, an old-timer, a guy that's been drinking, you know, for 55 years, you know. This morning, I said to him, hey, man, don't you think 55 years is enough drinking, man? And then I had an occasion, you know, I said to the fellow, you know, it's never too late. It's never too late, man, to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And right after that, man, I had occasion, you know, to talk to, you know, a young lady, you know. And I said to her, it's never too early. It's never too early to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful and thankful, man, you know, because if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to welcome you. And we try to pass on to you what was passed on to us. And that's namely that we love you whether you like it or not. And you know, since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, you know, and working with others, you know, I've heard my story over and over again, Bernard. I have heard my story over and over again. I see a new fellow come into the program, man, you know. And then he disappears and he comes back, you know, after a few years. And he says to me, I got me a sponsor, you know. And all I did was follow him. I did what he did. That reminded me of you, Bernard. All I did was follow you, man. Not just me, but a lot of us, man. Tony, Daniel, all of us, man. You know, ever since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, man, it seems to me that God has placed the right people at the right place at the right time to help me. To say the right things to help me. And I needed help, man. You know, when I got here. You know. I used to have a little clothing store, you know, in Fresno. Named Tomas Fashions. You know. And I outfitted, you know, some of the sharpest dressers, you know, in Fresno. I mean, they used to come and see me from the Bay, from L.A., you know. I outfitted, you know, people from here, from Visalia. The Doobie Brothers. You know, when they first started out, you know, I outfitted them. I outfitted you, Red Fox from Sanford and Son, you know. And the Son, both. They used to come into my shop. You know. I used to do the buying and the selling, you know. I had, you know, a nice clothing store, man. You know, I had mirrors, you know, for my customers. I sell them shirts, pants, you know, leather jackets, you know. And, you know, I buy the clothes and I'd wear them. You know, I'd be wearing, you know, a brand new leather coat, man, you know what I'm saying? A nice, you know, new shirt, you know, some new slacks. And I'd be looking in that mirror and I'd be looking sharp. But inside, hey, inside I was a wreck, man. And this here is an inside job. And the question is, how are you doing inside? Everybody has an inside. How you doing inside, man? Yeah. I was messed up inside. Alcoholics Anonymous has changed that for me. You know that feeling? You know that feeling where there's no other place, you know, you would rather be than where you're at? Hey, I got that feeling right now. There's no other place I would rather be right now than right here with you. With the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I drank, you know, that business, man, to the ground. You know, I used drugs. I first came to AA in 73. I come from an alcoholic family. Yeah. I have, you know, two brothers that are in the program. One of them has 50 years. I talked to them just before the meeting. You know, he's got 50 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know. And my younger brother has 46 years. I spoke to both of them today. You know. I have three sponsors. Bernard's my sponsor here, man. I know I can call him anytime, man. That's what a sponsor does. It's important for me to have a sponsor and to have a sponsee. You need both. I need both. I need you more than you need me. And it's taken me many years to learn that. And I'm reminded every time I talk, you know, to my older brother, the one that has more sobriety than I do, you know, he reminds me, hey, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't need you. You need Alcoholics Anonymous. So he trusted me, man. In 73, I was hanging by a thread, man. They took me to a meeting over at the Alano Club in Fresno. And one of the things, you know, that I become very aware of, you know, when it comes to Visalia, how similar it is to Fresno. They're both dangerous. But, you know, he took me to a meeting, man, and you know, I felt, you know, like a trapped rat, you know, and there was a bunch of people in there. He'd been sober then, at that time, about 10 years, I believe, you know. But he took me to a meeting, you know, there at the Alano Club in 1973. And there was a bunch of cowboys there. And I'd been fighting cowboys all my life, man. And they need that cowboy talk on me, man. You know what I'm saying? Hey, you can eat a horse of water, but you can't make him drink. You can sober up a drunken horse thief, and all you got left is a sober horse thief. You got to put the horse in front of the cart. You got the horse behind the cart. You're not going to get anywhere, man, until that horse comes, is put in front of the cart. That mighty first step. The mighty first step. Getting started. It's still the hardest thing in the world to get started, man. You know? We will find a new freedom and a new happiness. A new freedom and a new happiness. You know? So you're going to have to admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. Otherwise, this program's not going to work. It's like spinning wheels. You have to admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. And I had a difficult time doing that, man, because, you know, I was 33 years old, man. You know, and I've been cheating and lying most of my life. And I buried that innermost self. Yeah. I couldn't make contact with it. It was buried, you know, with lies. You know, I lied to myself, you know. But I said to myself, okay, so I'm an alcoholic. And I can't drink alcohol. So I'll keep using dope. So in 1975, man, you know, I ended up in the hospital. I come from the hospital, man. You know, I've been in jails. I've been in hospitals. And in 1975, I ended up at the old Valley Medical Center. You know, I was there as a result, you know, of a fight. You know. And they took me there in an ambulance, you know. And as soon as I snapped as to where I was in the hospital, I said, well, there's got to be some drugs in the hospital. So I'm there creating a disturbance in the emergency room. Man, if you got an emergency, man, don't go to the emergency. I'm getting there and I'm screaming, give me something, give me something. So they give me a shot of morphine to shut me up. You know, I wasn't feeling any pain. You know, next thing I know, man, you know, I began to feel an itch on my knee. And then it got stronger to where it woke me up, man. And when it woke me up, they had me strapped down to a bed. And there's, you know, a fellow drilling a hole through my knee, man, with the kind of drill you used to drill through metal. And I'm watching him, man, you know. And I'm saying, give me something, give me something. So they give me another shot of morphine. I remember thinking to myself, shit, I think I'll break my other leg. I'm getting a shot of morphine, you know, every 3 hours, you know what I'm saying? The head nurse comes over and she says, you know what, the doctor wants to talk to you. You know, he asked me, you know, to arrange a meeting with you. You know, which reminds me of a little story that I like to share, you know, about the little wino. This little wino been in and out of jail, in and out of detox centers, man, finally he ends up in this recovery home, you know, and they tell him, the director tells him, hey, the doctor wants to talk to you, you know, and so he has to make an arrange a meeting with you. So it takes him into a room, there's a doctor that's got a table, you know, and the doctor's sitting on one side of the table, and the little wino sits right across from him, and the doctor has a clear glass of water and a clear glass of alcohol, you know, and the little worm, and he picks up the little worm, shows it to the little wino, he says, you see that little wino? He says, yeah. And so he gets the little worm and drops it into the clear glass of water. The little worm starts to swim around, you know, just as happy as can be, you know, doing his somersaults, you know. And the doctor says, picks up the little worm, says to the little wino, did you see that? Little wino says, yeah. Then he gets the little worm and he drops it into the clear glass of alcohol. Well, that little worm tries to swim around, man. All of a sudden, it stiffens up straight as a board, dead as a doornail. The doctor says to the little wino, did you see that? The little wino says, yeah. Well, did you learn anything from it? The little wino says, yeah. If I keep on drinking, I won't get worms. The doctor says to me, look, he says, Tomas, we're going to get you off of that morphine. He said, we're going to get you off of that morphine with some Percodan. So I'm getting, you know, morphine and Percodan to give me out the morphine and codeine to sit on my stomach, you know, because my stomach's getting upset. My friend comes to visit me, the first thing comes out of my mouth is, "Are you holding anything?" So, you know, he proceeds to lay a bullet on me and I drop it, and they say that a man knows when he's going to die. I began to feel weak, you know, and I turned white as a sheet. You know. And the nurse comes and she looks at me and she says, "Damn, they give me a blood transfusion." Start giving me a blood transfusion. You know. I mean, they got, you know, things coming up my arms, my nose, you know what I'm saying? And so again, I asked God, "Help me, and help me, and this time, you know, I'll change my ways." He answered me, man, right at the fourth floor, you know, of the Valley Medical Center. He says to me, "You know what, man? Every time that you're in trouble, every time that you want something, you know, every time that you're locked up, you know, you ask me for help. And then I help you and you turn around and do the same damn thing over again. And I'm fed up with your ass. Yeah? And I'm going to let you die." So I commenced, you know, to bless everybody, man. You know what I'm saying? I commenced to, I call home. I say, "Mama, bring me the rosary. I've had it this time." She didn't want to see me anymore. See, that's one of the similarities that we have here, man, is that we hurt the people that we love. You know, my Al-Anon, man, it was going to be, we're going to be married 57 years this month in a few days, you know. And, you know, I owe it to Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe everything to Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? And I got a black belt Al-Anon, man. You know what a black belt Al-Anon is? Yeah. Hey, she holds the key to the oldest Al-Anon meeting in Fresno. She holds the key. And a black belt Al-Anon is this little. I used to close up the bars in Fresno. You know? Well, this fellow, you know, he's closing up the bars. The bartenders are getting ready to go home. This guy's sitting there, you know, and he's passed out, you know, so the bartender calls a cab to take the guy home. You know, cab driver takes the guy home. You know, gets to the house, you know, and walks up the stairs, you know, and knocks on the door, you know. The lady comes out and cab driver says to her, "Is this yours?" She says, "Yeah." "Well, he called the cab and now he doesn't have the money to pay the fare." She said, "Well, how much does he owe you?" Cab driver says, $10. She goes up, opens up her purse, takes out a 20, gives it to him, says, "Take him back where you got him from." I went to a meeting, man, you know, some time back, you know, and she says to me, "You're not going to wear that raggedy old shirt to the meeting, are you?" And I look at her and I says, "Well, maybe I'm raggedy on the outside, but I'm riding in a limousine on the inside." So this here is an inside job, okay? The doctor says they're going to take me out of this, they're going to do this. Hey, I got out of there by the grace of God. They had a hard time getting me out of the hospital because nobody wanted me. Yeah. That's how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Nobody wanted me. Somehow, you know, God touched her heart, man, and she took me, and she arranged this room for me, you know what I'm saying? Clean sheets and everything. They took me home in an ambulance. I couldn't walk, man. I had a body cast on. You know, it was all the way up to my chest. It weighed more than me. So she arranged this room for me, man, and she'd take off to work. I have 5 children. They'd take off to school, you know, and I'd be confined to this body cast, man. You know, I'd be, you know, couldn't bend over. I'd be laying there, you know, and I'd be looking around, you know, at the walls, and the walls were cracking, man, and the windows were cracked, you know, and I'd be thinking to myself, man, here you are playing the big shot. Because I was a big shot when I was half shot, you know. And you haven't done a damn thing to help this family. Yeah. See, I squandered everything, man. Yeah. At that time, at the Alano Club in Fresno, on one side they had Alcoholics Anonymous, on the other side they had Al-Anon. You know? Okay? She was going to Al-Anon meetings. I said to her, "Take me to one of those meetings, man, you know." So I walked into the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with a body cast that weighed more than I did, man. You know, with the tail between my legs, you know, and barely able to get out of the car. I remember driving to that car. I had a hell of a time, man, because I couldn't bend over. So, you know, two of my sons stood in the back. My wife stood in the front, man, and I fell back, and they squeezed me in the back seat. And I'm laying back down. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Then we had a hell of a time getting out of the car, man. I couldn't get out. But I walked into a meeting, man, and a fellow named Travis takes a look at me and he says, "It's a time for prayer, man." So I keep going to the meetings, man. You know, I wanted what you people have. I wanted what you people have. I want what you people have. That's why I'm here. You know, it's like they ask this newcomer, you know, you may not want what we have, but ask yourself, do you want what you have? And I kept coming back to the meetings. And listening. See, I've always had a hard time listening, man. See? And I've learned, you know, over the years that in Alcoholics Anonymous, in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we have all the answers, man. From the moment we say, you know, the serenity prayer, to the moment that we say the Lord's Prayer, you know, the answers are written for all of us. The answers are here for all of us, man, in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. But see, I couldn't see the writing on the wall. It took me a while, man. I couldn't see, you know, like when you're locked up or you're in a dungeon, man, you know, and you come out, you know, out of that closet or come out of that darkness, how difficult it is to focus. That's the way it was for me, man, you know. I couldn't see. I didn't know, man, about, you know, doing something for someone else without expecting anything in return. I didn't know that, man. I was 35 years old and I had never learned, you know, how to be a giving person. I was a taking person. Yeah. What's in it for me? Yeah. And I have to be very careful about that, man, thinking that I'm all right the way that I am. Because, see, that's the way I used to feel when I was drinking and using drugs. I'm all right. I'm fine just the way I am. Yeah. But, you know, a fellow comes, I'm hanging out at the club, and this fellow named Mike Bach comes up, big guy, you know. And he says to me, Tomas, they call me, you know, from central office. Back then we didn't have no cell phones. He said, they call me from the central office, go on a 12-step call. You want to go with me? My first thought was, says, nope. But, you know, I had heard enough to where they said, do the opposite. Do the opposite of whatever it is your nature to do, do the opposite. So I went with him on my first 12-step call. It was over on Fresno Street. You know, this guy lived in an apartment, you know, right across the street from the taco shack. Okay. Oh, me, Mike and I, you know, we drive down to do a 12-step call, just like Ron and I drove up here tonight. And we're having that meeting before the meeting. You know, that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, with each other, with sponsees and with sponsors. Mm-hmm. And he's telling me his story, man. He says, you know, I was sitting in my apartment, you know, drinking a beer. My brother comes in, man, you know, and they beat the hell out of him. Some guys had beat the hell out of him. And he says, well, who did it? Let's go get him. So they jump in the car. They go to this apartment. Mike being a big guy, he knocks down the door, man. As soon as he knocks down the door, they shoot him in the stomach. He's telling me the story, you know, on the way to the 12-step call. He said, they shoot me in the stomach. They run back, get in the car, man. They go back to his apartment. He opens the refrigerator and gets another beer. Oh, so we get to the toxic car, man. We walk up, you know, to this apartment building in there. Old Mike knocks on the door, you know, and this guy answers the door. And I'm standing there like I know what I'm doing, you know. And he says, Umek says to him, did you call Alcoholics Anonymous? And he says, yeah, I called Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, he says, well, we're from Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, yeah, but it wasn't for me, it was for my brother. Well, where's your brother? He says, he had him locked up in a back room, man. You know. He opens the door, man. The wildest guy I ever seen in my life comes out of there, man. His eyes were already angrier than hell, man. Long hair, all made up in leather, a biker, you know. you know, man, we take him to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's passed away now, but he passed away clean and sober, 36 years.
Wow.
36 years. That was my first 12-step call. You know, it's very important, man, to have sponsors and have sponsees. We need them both. Yeah. We need them both. I used to sponsor this fellow. You know, I sponsored a lot of fellows. But this one particular guy, you know, they all tell my story. He said, I used to be walking across the street in Chinatown. The police would stop me. I'd tell them, I'm not doing anything. The police would say, I know, but you're going to. Another fellow I used to sponsor, man. This guy, everything used to bother him, man. Back then, he used to smoke in the meetings. Everything used to bother him. But if something bothered you, he'd forget everything that was bothering him to help you with whatever was bothering you. Mm-hmm. Hey, we learn. We learn from sponsors. We learn from sponsors. We need them both. You follow your sponsor. Do what he does. You know. We don't have to reinvent the wheel in Alcoholics Anonymous. Hey, it's all here for us. We just got to read, you know, the writing on the wall. Yeah. It's here for all of us. From the moment the meeting starts till the moment the meeting ends. You know. They told me that I was when I had to come to, you know, believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And the sanity kind of puts a block in there, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, I learned that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, man, and expecting different results. So in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the gifts that we have, man, is a little soundness of mind. A peace. That priceless, priceless gift. Priceless gift. A peace of mind. The reason it's a priceless gift, man, is because you can't buy it. It's not for sale. You can't go to Costco or Walmart, man, and say, hey, I want to buy some peace. But we have it here. Yeah. We have it here in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Peace of mind. You know. So they said to me, these three things you gotta do in the second step, Tomas. You know, the first thing you gotta do, man, is stop fighting. Hey, an alcoholic will fight when there's no reason to fight. Will drink when there's no reason to drink. 1,000 excuses, but no reason. This guy calls the cab. He gets in the cab. The cab driver tells him, where to, sir? He says, none of your damn business. We relax, we stop fighting, man. And the third part, man, these are the three things we need to do, that I need to do in the second step. Now, you know, one of the good things about Alcoholics Anonymous, man, is that we all have to do the same thing. If you knew, you got to do the same thing that the old timers have to do. You have to go to meetings, you have to sponsor, you have to have sponsees, you know what I'm saying? You have to relax, you have to stop fighting. And the third part is the hardest part, man, the open mind. Closed-minded people, they say an alcoholic is a close relative to the mule. You want to get the attention of a mule, you got to hit it beside the head with a 2x4. But you know, I don't believe, you know, that it's wise to spend too much time in each step, because you're going to be going over them again. The more often you go over them, the better, the easier it gets. The easier it gets. Then we make that decision. That Andrew talked about. The best decision I've ever made. God, I offer my life to thee. To build with me, to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me from the bondage of self. That I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. That victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Of thy glory, thy love, and the way of life. Yeah. We love you whether you like it or not, man. You know. Without conditions. Then, you know, I had to make that searching and fearless moral inventory of myself, man. You know what I'm saying? You know what, man? Relief never comes from admitting the faults of others. Everybody has to admit their own. Hey, I could tell you what was wrong, man. I could tell you what was wrong with... Hey, I could tell you what was wrong with California, with the country, even today, man. You know, I go to the doctor. I've been going to the... I've had a rough year physically, man. But I think it's helped me spiritually. So, hey, man, I got nothing to not be grateful about. You know, I got cancer, you know what I'm saying? And I kind of suspect that, you know, it's been taken care of, you know. But they put me in they gave me radiation. You know? And now I'm recovering from the radiation, man. You know what I'm saying? It takes away your strength. I don't walk. I walk like a little old man. I know I ain't no youngster, but you know. They put me in these machines. You know, they put me in these machines, man, for the radiation. The radiation is not, the recovery is what's hard, man. You know, they put you in these machines, and then they turn off all the lights and they split. They leave you there all alone, man, going in these machines. And then, like, these flying saucers come over you, man. And they start shooting this radiation at you, you know? And I'm there saying, rarely have you seen a person fail to refer to call it a fact. We make a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. You know? There ought to be a law against fear. It causes more trouble than stealing. Hey, I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have nothing. But I was afraid I was going to lose something that was mine. I was afraid I was going to not get something that I demanded. Everybody knows the difference between a request and a simple demand. You know. Then we admit, you know, to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrong. Hey, that's Alcoholics Anonymous, man. God, ourselves, and another human being. It's a we program. We're in this thing together. We help each other, man. We're here to help each other. You know, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. You know, one drunk talking to another. We're all one drink away from a drunk, man. You know what I'm saying? And I have to be very careful about thinking, you know. My thinking led me to drinking. And a meeting a day keeps the thinking away. And you can't think your way to right living. You have to live your way to right thinking. That's what we have in AA, man. That's what we have in the 12 steps. You know, a way where we can, you know, live our way to right thinking. And my thinking has changed. I'm more grateful now than I have ever been. Even though my health isn't what it's been, even though I've had a difficult time, man, you know, in 2017, man, you know, even though I've gone through the radiation and everything, I just got back from San Francisco, man. And you think we have a problem here in Visalia and in Fresno? Shit, you should see San Francisco, man. Matter of fact, Fresno, Visalia is no different than San Francisco. And we have homeless people that are hurting, man. You know, we have people sleeping in doorways. You know, hey, I asked my daughter and my grandson. You know, they were with me up there. Then they kind of got lost. You know, they couldn't find the way back to the hotel. They walk into this Chinese restaurant and they tell them, get in direct. They say, but don't go there; it's dangerous. So then they go over to the police station and they're asking for directions. The police tell them, don't go through there; it's dangerous. So, you know, hey, Visalia and Fresno are dangerous, man. You know. So, you know, I made that inventory of myself. And it was put very well, man, by Andrew. Selfishness, self-centeredness to the extreme. Man, I drank to the extreme. I think to the extreme. I worry to the extreme. I resent to the extreme. I hate to the extreme. I better be careful with those extremes, man. Those extremes are no good. They're no good for you. They're no good for us. Man. And that's the problem of the alcoholic, man. For this alcoholic. I know that I'm that way. And I'm impatient. But today I know. I know what's wrong with me, man. And I used to say to my sponsor, I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. You know what he'd say? Keep asking yourself that. In Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I got a finger on the things that are wrong with me. Most of it is that I got to keep my mouth shut. You know, when it wants to go on. You know, I need to think of the other person. Hey, and he said, please, God first, the other person second, and yourself last. He said, me last? But that's Alcoholics Anonymous, man. It's in self-forgetting that one finds. Before I came to this meeting, before I go to any meeting when I'm invited to speak, that's the first thing that I do, man, is I get on my knees and I say, to thine own self be true. You know, in self-forgetting, you know, it's when you find. So I got to forget myself, man. I gotta forget that nervousness, you know, or the things that are bothering me. All I wanna do, man, is be able to reach somebody that might need a little bit of help. I need help. You know, there's nothing wrong with needing help, man. You know. But I keep coming back to the meetings. I keep hanging with the people that stay here. Not, don't worry about the ones that don't stay. Focus on the ones that stay. Yeah. And we become entirely ready. to have God remove all these defects of character. What do they say? This is the step that separates the men from the boys. I used to say, nobody better, pal, tell me I'm a boy. They said, keep it simple, sweetie. There was a lady there named Grace Elizabeth. Some of you old timers remember her, man. When I was new in the program, I sat right next to her, and you know, nothing but filth coming out of my mouth, and she'd move back away from me like that. She used to go down to the courthouse and feed the pigeons, you know. But you know, we become entirely ready, you know, to have God remove all these defects of character. God will help us. God loves the alcoholic. God loves the alcoholic. Everything that I went through was for a reason. It wasn't wasted, man. It wasn't wasted. All the suffering that I went through, man, you know, all the times, all the hurt that I gave myself, it wasn't wasted. It was for a reason. If you're here and you're clean and you're sober, it's for a reason. This is a God thing. It's a spiritual thing. You know what the old timers told me when I was new? Tomas, you got everything backwards, man. Yeah, you got everything backwards. You want to get right physically, you know, mentally, financially, and then spiritually. It don't work that way. You got to get right spiritually, then the physical, the mental, the financial will follow. Everything will follow. Hey, I'm following Bernard, man. I'm going to prisons, you know. I'm going to jails, you know. I'm going to institutions, you know. I'm doing the work. That's what helped me. Yeah. Everything good that has happened to me has been as a result of helping someone else. Everything. I'm doing all of this stuff. These financial planners come in. Okay? An uncle and a nephew. Yeah. The uncle, you know, it was a periodic drinker. You get stoned and disappear, you know, for a week, you know. And the nephew wanted to help him, so, you know, for the business world. I needed a job, man. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't working, man. I was doing the AA deal, but I wasn't bringing any money home. You know, and I needed work. So the nephew gives me a job because he wanted to sober up the uncle. Okay? So I go to work for them, man. They helped me get my license. They helped me pass the state test, man. The state, hey, I owe the state money. I owe the federal government money. You know what I'm saying? And these people, you know, they helped me pass the test. Alcoholics Anonymous. They helped me pass the test, man. I was able to get a career, man, you know what I'm saying? Where I could help people and where I could retire from. You know, it all came from AA. Yeah. Trying to help somebody else. Yeah. Everything good that's happened to me has been as a result of helping someone else. Yeah. And the old timers knew that when I got there, man. They knew what I needed. They seen right through me. Old Black John, he looks at me when I first come in 73. He says, you're not ready. You're too slick. And he was right. And he was right. You know. So, you know, we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Of myself, I'm nothing. The Father doeth the work. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of my life, both the good and the bad of me. I pray that you now remove every defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Grant me strength as I step out from here to do thy bidding. Hey, I lost my strength, man, with the radiation. I've been praying that, man, for quite a while now, man. I'm trying to get my strength back. The doctor told me in San Francisco, it's the radiation. It's the radiation that's got you that way. But, you know, I have faith. You know, I don't see myself, you know, kicking the bucket yet. I don't think God's, you know, done with me yet. You know. Right. Yeah. So we make a list. We make a list of the people that we have harmed. You know. And we become willing to make amends to them all. You know. You know, I one of the fellows that I sponsor, and this guy always brings joy to my heart when I think about him, man. Because he asked me, what do I do? I said, do a gratitude list. So, you know, he comes back with me with a gratitude list. There's only one line there. You know, I look at it and then he says, what do I do? I said, do a gratitude list. You know, so he comes back, man, and there's only two or three lines there. You know what I'm saying? He said, what do I do? He said, do a gratitude list. Man, he comes over, man, he's got a list. Things to be grateful for. You can't be grateful and hateful, man. You're going to be one or the other. I let myself go to hate. Just like I let myself, you know, go to alcohol and drugs. I was antisocial. I hated society, man. You know, and I fought society. You know, I defied the law. You know, I know that. You know, but in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I've learned to be grateful and not hateful. God removed that hate. There's no room in my life for hate, man. There's no room in my life to judge. You know, I belong to the world of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. It's a good world. You know, I don't belong to the world out there. You know what the doctor says to me, man? We're going to find out what your problem is. I said to him, I ain't got no problems.
Yes.
I live in a problem world, man, but I ain't got no problems. You know, there's a lot of problems in the world, man. In an AA, we learn you can either be a part of the problem or a part of the solution. Hey, I love that word, the solution. Yeah. I first fell in love with it here in Alcoholics Anonymous because I always lived in the problem, you know. I come from a dead-end street, man. You know, Bernard and I both, you know, we grew up, you know, on the wrong side of the tracks. Matter of fact, he lived on one side of the tracks, and I lived on the other side of the tracks. And we used to beat the hell out of each other, man, you know, when we were youngsters, you know. But now, you know, we're sober together, man. Hey, I became a coordinator one time of the Carruthers Branch Jail. Okay? We went through the steps. Bernard took me on up, you know, as a member, you know, and then he got me to become a secretary, got me to be, you know, hey, I just followed him. You know. I go to a meeting at the Carruthers Branch Jail. Everybody comes out of their cell, man, because it's a good chance to get out of the cell when there's an AA meeting. And it was a big meeting, just like this one, you know. A fellow stands way in the back, you know, having the meeting. He didn't want to get too close to them AAs. They're weird. They talk about God and they laugh about their problems. A lot of people feel that way, you know. But he stood back there, man, and you know, after the meeting was over, he walks up to me and he says, hey, Tomas, he says, you mean you just stopped drinking and using drugs and that's all? I said, no, man. I had to start praying. I asked him, have you ever tried praying? The man had just gotten out of doing 5 years in Soledad. And he found his ass back in jail, man. And he was bewildered, couldn't figure out what the hell happened. You know. And he said, do you mean you stopped drinking and using drugs? I said, no, man, I had to start praying. I said, have you ever tried praying? He says, no. I said, maybe you should try praying, man. Maybe you should try praying. You know. Praying and meditating. You know, praying is talking to God, meditating is listening to Him. I've never been a good listener. But you know, my wife, my mother, you know, they said, he only hears what he wants to hear. You know, I knew I was making progress in AA, man, when I went home and my wife called me honey. She used to call me that one. Hey, we make direct amends wherever possible, man. Except when we do so would injure others, you know. Sometimes, you know, it's best to talk to your sponsor when you make amends, man. But I found that, you know, I made some amends without even planning on it. I run into people, you know, that I know that I've harmed, you know, after, you know, in sobriety. And I've been able to make some amends, you know, that way. I had, you know, sister-in-law, man, you know, that I had a big resentment against. And I had to make amends to her, man. And as soon as I did, that resentment was gone. Yeah. Resentments, like I've been told, man, is like letting somebody live in your head rent-free. Yeah. And a resentment is like an old tomcat, you know. If you don't feed it, it'll go away. But sometimes I keep on feeding the damn thing, man. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, we come to, you know, that place where, you know, we continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, we promptly admit it. Hey, this is where a lot of the nourishment is. The nourishment is in all of the steps, but in the 10th step, there's a lot of nourishment there, man. the one, you know, that I have a difficult time to this day is the spot check inventory. When new events or people throw me off balance. When something, hey, the coffee pot broke down, all of a sudden, you know, I go into a panic attack. You know what I'm saying? You know, the grave emotional and mental disorders. That emotional booby trap. I'm having a great day and the coffee pot breaks down. Next thing I know, the world's ending. The direct result of yesterday's and sometimes today's excess of negative emotion. Extremes are no good, folks. Extremes are no good. When something goes wrong, man, you know, that spot check inventory, I gotta let go and let God. Let go and let God. I couldn't let go of the booze. I couldn't let go of the drugs. I couldn't let go of that woman. When I first met Bernard and asked him to be my sponsor, I told him, I can't control that woman. He says to me, "That you can't control that woman. Shit, you can't even control yourself." I says to him one time, "I'm feeling all this guilt." He says, "That's because you're guilty." And we seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Yeah? Conscious contact. Not unconscious. Not the unconscious mind, man. You know, I spent a lot of time there. But you know, you work the conscious mind, and the subconscious mind will follow. Not right away, but it will follow. The subconscious mind. But the unconscious mind, forget it, man. Now, another way to describe it is a blackout. I was a blackout drinker. Hey, one time I was driving down Fresno Street and I slammed into this car. The police came over and they arrested me. I said to them, "I don't speak English." And they arrested me in Spanish. They said, you hit that car. How do I know? I was in a blackout, man. I don't know. We seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. Lord, make me a channel of Thy peace. That where there's hatred, I may bring love. That where there's wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there's discord, I may bring harmony. That where there's error, I may bring truth. That where there's doubt, I may bring faith. That where there's despair, I may bring hope. That where there's shadows, I may bring light. That where there's sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek to comfort rather than to be comforted. To understand than to be understood. To love than to be loved. For it is in self-forgetting that one finds. It's in forgiving that one is forgiven. And it's in dying that one awakens to eternal life. Yeah. Prayer is talking to God. Meditation is listening to Him. Sometimes, you know, I look for quiet more now than I ever have before, man. Listening to silence. Yeah. I'm ready, man. I'm ready if He wants to talk to me. I just let Him know. Talk to me. If you want to talk to me, talk to me. If you don't, that's fine too. But I'm listening. I'm listening. Yeah. I never listen to anybody, man. That was my problem. Yeah. Then having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. That's what we're doing here tonight, man. That's what we're doing here tonight. You know, we're practicing the principles in all of our affairs. We try to carry the message to the alcoholic who's still suffering. Yeah. I talked to the young lady today. I told her, it's never too early. It's never too early to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I talked to an old guy, I've been drinking for a long time today. I told him, it's never too late. It's never too late to come here, man. I thank God for this program. I owe everything to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know. Happy birthday, Lupe. Thank you for coming. Thank you.